Monster Man, episode 433, Man Scorpion to Medusa.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, 2nd edition. But before we do that, it's time to thank a new Patreon backer. Yes, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And if, like today's backer, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I go through the myths and religions of the world and look at how to find inspiration in them for fantasy RPGs. So thank you very much, Des Alistair. Your support means a lot to me. In other news, pre-orders for the Meganium Mine Murders, my old school essential zine, are now being shipped. I have sent out emails to everyone who's backed at the print level. If you haven't got a message, check the email address you use for itch. Maybe it's in your spam folder, I don't know. Follow the links in that email to input your shipping information and so on. All right, let's get on to some monsters. Now, as I promised 2 weeks ago, our next monster is the Man Scorpion. Now, the Man Scorpion, to my mind, is a creature from Mesopotamian legend. I feel like I've said this maybe in that special episode we did about the Epic of Gilgamesh. I could have sworn that this monster was in an earlier monster book, but I cannot find it unless it appears under a different name. It might also have been in the special episode about Monsters of Glorantha, because the Bagogi, or Scorpion Men, are chaos creatures in the Glorantha setting. So, I said when I described this Sumerian mythology, in actual fact, the thing that was in my mind was Babylonian, right? There's a scorpion man in the army of monsters controlled by Tiamat in the Enuma Elish, but also there are scorpion men in the Epic of Gilgamesh, and they are servants of the sun god Shamash, and they guard the gates to the underworld, the realm where Shamash is during the nighttime. So he comes out of the gates, you know, in the morning and returns to them at night. Now, I've mentioned the idea that the Scorpion Man is rooted in Mesopotamian mythology, but actually the AD&D Scorpion Man, or Tlingkali, is more kind of sort of phony Mesoamerican rather than phony Babylonian. They are from Mazteca, which is the sort of faux Mexican region of the Forgotten Realms. I mentioned, I think, in a previous episode, the idea that Karatur is kind of the, you know, fake Asia of the Forgotten Realms setting, and this is the fake Mexico. If you go and look at, like, the Mazteca entry for the Scorpion Men, you get a little bit more detail. The one here is pretty bare bones. It's just the usual, like, composition of raiding parties. What kind of layers do they have? You know, all that sort of thing. Nothing wrong with any of it. It's fine. But the Mazteca one adds a bunch of weird details, like how they do this kind of tremor sense divination where they use the vibrations caused by surface-dwelling creatures, like walking over the roofs of their habitats as a form of predicting the future. They're kind of fatalistic, which may tie into their enthusiasm for fortune-telling. And sometimes they even do these kind of, like, lemming runs, where a bunch of them will just run until they're so exhausted that they drop dead. These are weird little details that I think do add to making them feel alien, which I think also the scorpion-like body structure does. One thing that interested me about the illustration of the Scorpion Men is that they're not really just, like, the body of the scorpion with a humanoid torso stuck on top of it, which, like, if you think of a centaur, the centaur has the human waist kind of taking over from the neck of the horse, right? The whole human body essentially replaces the horse's neck and head. But a scorpion, of course, doesn't have a head. You know, it doesn't have that structure that you would obviously mount a human body on. And if you look at the body of the Scorpion Man, it actually doesn't look as scorpion-y is all that. Like, it's scorpion-like in its layout, in its legs, and in the shape of the body, and in the presence of a curling tail, but it doesn't look like somebody just stuck a human and a scorpion together. In fact, the humanoid body doesn't, you know, it's got some pretty weird kind of, it almost looks like it's been skinned or something like that. It's a very bloody, bright red color. So that's interesting. Again, what it looks like is that the name Scorpion Man came from someone trying to describe the shape of this thing. Because if you were to look at it, you would say, oh yeah, it's kind of like a scorpion. But you wouldn't say, yes, that's absolutely a scorpion. That seems good to me. I find these monsters pleasingly weird. A lot of animal people are just kind of exactly what you'd expect them to be, which, you know, like, it's fine, but this one is strange in a way that I like. Next up, we have the Manticore. This is a classic. It was covered back in season one, episode 38, to be precise. It originates from Persian legend. It's in the Indica, which is a book of stories about, like, foreign lands written by a Greek physician who was living in Persia. So he would kind of like hear tales that came to the Persian king's court, which is where he was working. And then, you know, he compiled all these fabulous tales into a book. This is an interesting one because the debunking, the search for a naturalistic explanation, starts very early. So the sort of Greco-Roman, I mean, he's Greek, but he's, you know, writing within a Roman cultural landscape, writer Pausanias thinks that this is just like a garbled description of a tiger. The manticore is one of those creatures, a bit like the chimera. It's not really all that interesting in a kind of narrative sense, but it's a grotesque image that people feel a sense of mythic familiarity with. If you're gonna just have them fight some monster that, like, pounces out of the undergrowth to maul you, the manticore is a good option. It tells you a little bit about what the sort of tone and style of the campaign is going to be. Now, finally, we have the Medusa, or more accurately, we have the type of Medusa that we know and love, right? We have the, you know, the Medusa. But there is another type of Medusa in this book, and we're gonna talk about that in our next episode, or our next regular episode. We have a special episode coming up later this week. We previously discussed the Medusa in episode 39, but also there was a My Favorite Monster special about the Medusa with guest Ahimsa Kirp. So there was a lot about Medusa that we've already covered, and it's not my intention to rehash it here, other than to say that the kind of sexualization of the Medusa in this section is kind of weird. Because this is a lady monster, the entry is at pains to point out how appealing the female body is, you know, apart from the scary face. It says that Medusas, like, lure their prey closer, and it specifically says, quote, "it will use its attractive body to lure males nearer," close quotes, presumably wearing some kind of veil or something to cover up its frightening appearance. This would be pretty nasty by itself, right? This is not a creature that has this connotation in its folklore. Like, we're not talking about the Lamia, where, okay, originally Lamia is not like that, but it gets turned into a kind of vampiric spirit that sometimes does have these sort of seductive qualities. There are lots of monsters that do, and that's the folklore. You might want the monster design to reflect that. I get that. But that's definitely not true of Medusa, I don't think. Although there is some, I mean, remember when we talked about the Gorgons, there were some sources that describe them as lovely, because there, I think it's talking about before the transformation, but also different traditions from different parts of the Greek-speaking world, whatever. But considering the context of kind of Medusa's origin story, I feel like this is even creepier. Though, you have to wonder about these adventurers who think that they're just gonna, like, meet a girlfriend while they're exploring some kind of ruined temple. Most people that you meet down there, like, they're not there because they want to encounter singles in their area, you know? I mean, you should definitely, it's fun to have a relationship with a partner that shares your interest, in this case, the interest in aggressive spelunking, but I don't know about any of this. To say nothing of the assumption that all males would be attracted to this lady, or that no ladies would. I mean, not a fan of it. I would say that in general, the quality of writing about issues of, like, seduction and sex and whatever in this era of D&D, and maybe in any era of D&D, is not very good. And somehow its combination of kind of prurience and prudishness makes it seem creepier than if it had just gone either way. Still, nothing wrong with the Medusa as a monster. Not a huge fan of this entry, but the monster itself is a classic. And one good thing about this entry, it also includes the Greater Medusa, so now they're not in two different books. So there's that. Leaving aside the tone, and I tend to believe that quite a lot of people were leaving aside the tone when they read these things, but leaving aside the tone, this is fine. The Medusa's a fine monster. This is an entry for it if you wanted to use it in an AD&D second edition game. It's fine. All right, so in our next episode, we're going to be taking a look at some monsters requested by listeners, and then after that, we're going to look at an unusual other type of Medusa. So I hope that you'll join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thanks for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.